No, really, what are friends for? Friends are for sending you a random text and meeting them on the street for the first time because they have your cat. I'm Gabrielle Ruiz.
And I'm Gabrielle's best friend, Pallavi Sastry, that pussy.
So the story is, I'm a little late to this recording because someone texted me and said, hey, we have your cat. She wandered into our house. Now, Veronica, who's like 14, she's from Detroit, Michigan. She's a Motor City kitty. She and I have decided to like start the indoor-outdoor venture because she's old and she should live her life. You know, we're in a nice little house and Philip thinks I'm going to be devastated one day, which he's probably true. But at the same time, like that cat litter for 14 years. Like,
well, has that subsided at all now that she's going outside? Are you not having to change out the litter as much?
I just sprained my foot, so I have no idea. And her shit really stinks. Mm. It always has. It probably always will.
Hey, friends, go on and flex.
I mean, it's a flex and a fucked. Like, yay, cat's going outside, but also somebody brought her back.
Okay, got it. So my flex for this week is that I've been getting back to cooking regularly, and it's been so like necessary, and it's very therapeutic for me. You know this about me. I love feeding people, love cooking for people. I love cooking in general. It really centers me. And so I wanted to flex a little bit about some of the meals that I've made in the last few days. While we were in Palm Springs for Labor Day weekend, I used the grill for the first time. I'm not really like a grill person, but like I made a Korean barbecue tofu with orange miso skewered vegetables. Yum. And then I've been really into pasta lately, like not just like any pasta, like I need a noodle, like a noodle situation. And so I made a lemon butter pasta with asparagus, and I change it up whether it's like a caper situation or an olive situation. It's just really yummy. And then my other noodle situation has been these go-to sesame ginger noodles with broccoli. I'll probably make them for dinner tonight. So that's my flex.
I love that for you. You know, also what I love about for you is that I just love it for me because I always get some pretty good perks about this. You're like, hey, do you want to come over? And Philip like runs.
That is actually, no offense, more of a compliment than you wanting to come over and eat.
And you know, a toddler, she eats everything up that you just make.
That's definitely a big compliment to you. Your daughter is definitely a better eater of my food than my own. So
really,
I'll take it. Yeah. So I mean, we're also in that toddler phase, you know, where she's like contrarian. So she just wants to say no to everything. Yeah, exactly. Nah. Unless it's her decision.
You know what's so interesting? I hope it makes you feel better. Is, as a Mexican American, Mercedes will eat every opportunity of guacamole except mine.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I know that you're not trying to feed her salads. So is that one of the few things that's? She's like, no.
I've been pretty good. I've been pretty good at the toddler food, I have to say. We eat in a lot. Now, do I do like fish sticks? Absolutely. And mac and cheese? 100%. We are a mac and cheese fam. I do have to say, I really clean that kitchen 3 times a day. And it can get wearing. And there is a moment where I'm like, we're eating out. So I am in that phase of momhood and it's not bad.
Totally. So totally get that. Totally empathize. But I was going to say, like, my fucked in response to that, though, is as plant-based as I am, as like natural, organic centric as I am, like, I can't keep a damn plant alive. I've like literally at this point, I think I have killed almost every plant in my house and the house down the street that we manage. I even have like this beautiful, fully grown avocado tree that we inherited when we moved into this house that bears inedible fruit. So it's like nature is telling me to fuck right off. And so it's like the biggest dilemma of my life. So I don't know if I'll ever be able to grow my own food. And that is something that really endlessly bothers me. So I don't know. Maybe I need to like talk to my therapist about it.
Or talk to your mom. Didn't she plant all those plants out in the front yard?
Those are doing okay only because she was in charge of them. And so we like set them up to have like a drip system situation. But like, and honestly, nobody prunes them. I don't even touch them until she comes to visit. And thankfully she comes to visit like every 3 or 4 months. So I'm just like holding my breath until she comes again. So I don't have to touch
them. Keep it together, guys. Grandma's coming.
Yeah, it really bothers me, but I don't know what to do about it.
I'm really sorry. That's so fucked up for you. And the thing about this segment is I'm not going to try to fix it for you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I just really wanted to complain about it because there is no solution. The only solution is spending more time on it and more effort and trying to learn something new, which is, you know, taking care of plants. And I don't want to do that. So I'm just going to complain for a minute.
I am pretty passionate about how I kill plants too and how I do try. And then like I get offended when they die. I don't think they're doing their part.
I'm exactly with you. I think I'm half and half depending on the plant. Like if I had a hand in choosing it myself when it dies, I'm just like, I've literally gone up to a plant and given it the middle finger.
Yeah. Go fuck yourself. Die then. No, I told you Philip brought a Venus flytrap home, right?
Oh, I don't think maybe I did know about this. Remind me.
Philip decided to bring home a Venus flytrap when he went to Home Depot and we had moved into this house, and he think it would be fun for a toddler who doesn't speak English to learn about a Venus flytrap. And the thing about it is that the container that it's in has illustrated flies on it. So it looks like there's flies in this container that are not there. So it's just gross. It's just like a gross container. And he's like, so I brought this for Mercedes. And I was like, okay. I said, this is a new conversation for parenting. Like, we should talk about when you bring pets home before you bring a pet home. Because it's a living being that actually, it's a carnivorous plant, right? And so,
right.
Did it eat a
she
fly?
She sticks her little finger in it and we're in trouble.
Well, it would close up when we put a fly in there. A fly never got caught in there. And then the stupid little Venus trap would die. So it's even grosser. And then it would spit it out. Like, it's disgusting. And like, no, I'm not going to. And it was on my windowsill where I'm washing my dishes. I've worked really hard to have a windowsill on top of my sink. New York and condo life for a very long time. And I'm like, wanting to have the scenic moment. And I told Philip, I was like, by the time the third one died from being fed a gnat, we went smaller. We went leaner, you know, protein for it. I was like, throwing it away. This does not earn its place in this house. It's supposed to eat flies. We're literally helping it and it's dying. Gotta go. And it's also like orchids. Like I was like emotionally damaged by my orchid in New York. And I went to the orchid show and you could tell everyone that was there was literally in orchid therapy. Like they were like, I don't understand.
I don't know what to do.
Like I just, it never comes back. And like I'm still watering it. And is it too close to my window unit? And we're just, and he's like, okay, guys, everyone take a deep breath. We're going to be fine. And we're going to talk about the anatomy and check the roots and give it a whirl. And we're all like, okay. And then I got home and I took the fucking orchid roots out and they were dead. They were just dead. And I remember I'm so passionate. Look how offended I am. It just like, it boils up fast. And I was like, you know what? It's a stick in a plant. And this fucking stick is sitting on my dining table, not doing anything. Gotta go. And so Philip once brought an orchid after we were married. And he was like, look, I brought us an orchid. And I was like, that's a fucking stick. It's a stick. It's a stick plant because they have that stick to keep the orchid straight because it's already so delicate. And I was like, no. I was like, it's going to die and you have to take care of it. We don't have central AC when he got it. I was like, we don't have central AC and we barely have any counter space. And this fucking stick is going to take up space on my table. When it dies, I'm throwing it away.
Yeah, no, this is why you and I are friends. Like, I mean, I might go a little bit more extreme than you, though, because and you know the story, and I'll just tell a very Cliff Notes version of it so we can get into the conversation at hand. But, you know, And again, like I've been a vegetarian for most of my life. I've been vegan for like 11 years. Like I love plants. I love nature. I love all of it. Like I love admiring it and whatnot.
Earth.
But yeah, exactly. Mother Earth, you know? And I remember my senior year in college when I started getting serious with Hari and I had we had like our first semester, like, you know, recital or something. And this embarrassing box of flowers showed up to the theater and he didn't know that I don't consider that to be a good gift. Like, and I opened the box and I was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, and I had to call him and be like, why would you do that? And he was like, it's a nice thing that people do for each other. And I was like, I don't know. They're going to die. So you just wasted your money.
I didn't know you said that.
I don't know if I said it in so many words. It's been a long time. It's been like 15 years, right? So like,
yes. And Hari is still recovering and going to therapy about it.
Yes. He still doesn't buy me flowers. He's like, you don't. I was like, I don't know. It'd be nice to like maybe start buying flowers. He was like, I'm walking out of the room.
Well, speaking of therapy in all the ways, I've gone to orchid therapy, apparently. Hari's going to flower therapy. This episode's about friendship versus therapy or therapist. Mm.
It can be a hot take conversation because like we want to think that we can confide in our friends and vent to our friends and complain to our friends, all of those things, right? But then like it can also be overwhelming and like you don't know where the line is until you're there or already over it. And that's what's hard about it.
Yeah. And when we were brainstorming our season 6 list of topics, like we put our wish list of guests, friends, and then we also do our wish list of topics and things that in our personal lives, in our authentic lives, you and I talk about off mic. And one of them came up where I'm like, I'm not that person's therapist. Like, where do I draw the line? This person keeps venting / maybe complaining / confiding about a certain thing to this point for the umpteenth time I've heard it. I don't know what to do about it. And this kind of like a parallel thing with the plant where I'm like, you know what? I gotta draw a line here. But more so, I remember when I broke up with the last guy before I started dating Philip, and he was giving me excuses after I was willing. Like, I wanted to talk to him about the breakup. Like, let's finalize this. And then he was ignoring me about it in my apartment, ignoring me. And then I walked away because I remember thinking, like, you know what? I'm not his fucking mother. Like, I don't need to tolerate this with you. But that's a sexual relationship. This is a platonic relationship where you can't, I mean, I don't think when someone is a friend is starting to wear down the meetup or wear down the environment that you're in with a problem that either doesn't want to get solved or they don't know that they're in this vicious cycle and you try to help them or you try not to help them and you're just kind of like, man, like how do I could have put a kibosh on this? And at the same time, literally not say, I'm not your therapist. Like, how do I help?
Yeah. We want to feel like we're helpful to our friends, but it's like you want to say in a non-harsh way because they're already struggling with something. So it's like we're afraid to say, I can't be this person for you, or like, I can't answer that question, or hey, you should go talk to somebody. Because maybe like for me, it feels like I'm either A, letting them down as a friend, or B, I just don't have the capacity. And like saying I don't have the capacity is also like hurtful in some way to them. Do you know what I mean? Like
I do.
It's really hard. And so that's sort of where we came to this topic, because there is, and I feel like it's always comes down to like the core issues that humans are facing, right? It's like, it's companionship is like something that people talk about. Money is something people talk about. Career is something that people talk about. Like family stress. Like it's all the same stuff that we're all going through, but it's like, how do we gently point our friends towards therapy when we can't do it anymore and we don't want to hurt their feelings?
This probably sounds harsh, but there comes a point for me. I feel like I go through phases with a friend. There's a specific friend who alias name we will say Runyon, because Runyon and I used to go hiking,
like, you know, LA casual hiking. Okay, like
right,
cute,
of course,
glamping.
I had to stop. I had to stop doing this specific routine with a specific person because the same topic run around of, ugh, it sucks that I'm so single, that person you were talking about, can you hook me up with them? Ha 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 ha. And like, it's a delicate situation because there's a lot of empathy with, like you're saying, like the stress of money, the stress of feeling alone, the stress of all this, and you want to be there for a friend. But I go through phases with friends where it's like, one, phase one is, yeah, okay, laugh it off. Phase two is you actually are like, oh, that's so sad. I mean, you want to be in a relationship. Let me help you. Which goes into phase three. Let me do that. Let me matchmake you. Sure. which, you know, has its own risks. And then phase four is like actually try to solve Runyon's either mental journey on what's going on or the actual relationship problem. Is there a relationship problem? Is it you? Is it, what is it? Like, who are you dating? Are you dating the same person all the time? You know, and then it finally happens where I'm just like, Runyon, like, I can't go hiking. And I don't, and just so you know, like, true confession, I just kind of avoid the situation. And then what I do to solve it is just change the environment, change the hangout, so that conversation doesn't come up. And I think for me, who can sometimes be a judgmental friend, I don't want to be frustrated with that friend. I don't want to be judgmental. I don't want to tell Philip later, ugh, Runyon, because then I become a victim of a cycle that isn't mine.
Right.
And so that's what I can do, is not be a victim myself. And if I, even if I do say, hey, friend, I mean, what do you do? Like, do you say, maybe you should see a therapist?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I remember I'm thinking about this conversation we had with Nick Dimas on the show last season, where we like said, you know, do you feel like a lot of people come to you as a coach and like you're doing therapy? Like, it's like therapy for them because they're trying to, you're trying to get them mm-hmm. out of their own way so that they can do their work. And she was, and Nick was like, you know, encouraging us to reframe it in our own heads and like ask questions. And I'm not great at this either. There are certain situations, like, you know, I'm thinking of a friend, I'll call this friend Latte, because, you know, I cannot tell you how many money conversations I've had with them, but this person will always have a $6 latte in their hand. Right.
And oh. So
I have come to this place where I'm not great at the whole asking questions thing yet. I'm getting better. But I've also found this sort of situation where I do want to be there for friends, and I do want to be there for a latte. So whenever they're talking about the situation that they're in money wise and why they got into that situation, you know, many reasons of which I are sometimes they're new reasons why they're in the money situation. Sometimes it's like the repetitive cycle with the combination of the new thing. Right. So what I do now is like, I just nod and I hear, and like, I try and hope that like, they're not going to ask me anything. And they usually don't. That's the thing, right? It's like, so I've tried to relieve myself of this burden of feeling like I have to have an answer or a response about it, you know, like, and that's really hard for me because I'm a fixer, right? I am a fixer, and like, that is my downfall, and I will inevitably try and fix it and give some sort of relief in the form of, you know, I have gone to the point of giving people money and giving them resources. And the thing is like, I like to be generous, but I never want to resent being generous. And so now I've just tried not saying anything at all and seeing if they can like work it out themselves in the conversation.
So you're just being a soundboard.
Maybe. I don't know if I'm a good one. But it's really difficult, you know, like I've had a conversation in the past with Latte about money and another friend of ours who's also like sort of in the same mindset as me about money. And it got so, and it was, it wasn't like demeaning, condescending. It was nothing. We weren't lecturing this person. I think the other friend and I in this conversation with Latte maybe felt like we were getting excited and amped and like, you know, of all the possibilities of, right, you know, a good situation. And Latte started crying. And I was like,
crying.
And I was like, oh, I overwhelmed this person. I shouldn't do that. Even if I think it's like what I'm trying to say is helpful and good, it just like proved to me that I don't have the answers for them. And so like, it's weird. I'm in a transitional phase with this friend too, of just like listening and hearing what they have to say and not having an opinion about it. It's really hard.
No, it really, really is hard. And I am not using the word therapy lightly. I just want to make that official out into the world. When we say therapist and therapy, there are more of a, like more of a colloquial feeling of the word, like, you know, plant therapy, like, you know, orchid therapy, but, or, you know, Hari with flower therapy. But therapy actually is a very wonderful thing that I have many experiences with. And the definition of it is the treatment of mental or psychological disorders by psychological means. So there are professionals out there that do a serious work and study to help people out there. And I don't want to say that it's a funny thing. I don't want to be like teasing about it. And I just want to say at the same time that I just have used that word before when I get stuck in a corner with a friend. And at this point, like I said about the ex-boyfriend and the more sexual relationship, like I'm not that person's mother and I don't need to be completely graced. I don't need to be as forgiving as, and like, you can do whatever you want. You're my child. No. And so that's where the word therapy is coming from in this conversation. Because in my experience with postpartum anxiety, there was so much I could dump, because I feel like therapy is a great place to unload, empty your cup, dump everything that you're 100% feeling without any feelings of judgment or consequences. That's what a professional therapist has done for me. And when I was having postpartum anxiety, there was so much, and I'm going to use the word dump for myself, that there was so much I could dump on my husband about the anxiety. There was so much I can dump my mother on with, and there was so much I could dump on you, Paula V. And you all were all like, you three specific people were there for me. And there was a moment with that journey of postpartum anxiety where I was like, I think I need to see a therapist, because anything else I give to these three people who are my survival packet right now with this anxiety, I don't feel like, I feel like I'll filter, I'll lie. I will want to hear something I want to hear, and I will just take another lap. I'll just take another lap exactly where I am. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not resolving. And also therapy isn't a place to like solve everything. It's a place to, for me, it's a place to dump and then like keep going with your life. And keep going with the anxiety and keep going with the depression or keep going with the issues that you're dealing with. So I do truly feel that the word is a very delicate word that we're using as best as we can.
Yeah. You know, and I think the difference for me between friendship and therapy is that as a friend, we want to be able to empathize, right? And like, we want mm-hmm. to be able to, share our own experience so that the other person doesn't feel as alone in their problem. But it's really hard to determine, as I said earlier, that, you know, if you're the person who's going through something and you feel like as a friend, you can empathize, like you still don't know if the other person wants to hear that from you. Right. And it's like, for me, it was so extreme through my, you know, teenage years and 20s of feeling like, oh, well, that person's having a problem. I shouldn't share anything that might be similar to that because they don't want to hear it from me, because my problems will then become their problem. And then the other extreme happened for me, mm-hmm. which is whereas like I didn't share anything about anything that I was struggling with or any of my problems. And it made me seem yep. very inaccessible. Like I had no problems. Like I had life figured out. Like I had, you know, very close friends tell me, you just like are so good at life. And I'm like crumbling on the inside because nobody's ever heard me talk about anything I'm struggling with. Right. And so that's for me where therapy came in, as like a place mm-hmm. like you said, is to dump. And so now it's like when I'm having these conversations are going, you know, going down this like really deep, intimate road of a relationship with a friend, it's like, I'm also working on in the moment, finding that middle ground of does this person want to hear this from me right now? Or do they just need to dump? Right. And it's an ongoing process, but like, thankfully no friendships have ended because of that, you know, because of me trying to find the middle.
I don't know. I might have ruined one.
You think you've ruined one based on
being insensitive, being judgmental, being sensitive. I mean, being insensitive, not sensitive. And then making light of a situation that I didn't know was serious. And I guess that's me doing like a an automatic defense on myself, which is not good either. You know, I need to be just sympathetic and apologetic. And even if I was clueless that it was hurting that person, I hurt their feelings. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So
right.
Stay tuned. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I've never ended a friendship or I've something I've done or said has not ended a friendship. That's absolutely been the case. Like there's been a couple in the last number of years I could think of. And I think, you know, I'm trying to sort of empathize with what you're saying right now. See, like this is me in the moment trying to find the middle of like empathizing with you, but also just listen.
And we want to hear from you guys. We want to hear, what is it that you all do? Is it a struggle for you as well when it comes to that friend that you don't know how to escape the trap of their psychological journey, whatever it may be, or their problems? how do you help that person? And also, how do you help yourself? Because friendship is a two-way street. It is not a one-way street. And it takes a lot of work. And that's what Friends Are For podcast is all about. You can DM us on our socials. And you can also email us at whatarefriendsforpodcast@gmail.com. If I'm the person that's venting, for instance, like with my PPA that we were talking about earlier, I love that you wrote down that you wanted to mention that to question and ask yourself the question, how do I not overwhelm my friends?
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what led to the tears in that money conversation with Latte, because I thought I was helping, you know, I thought by getting excited and getting, you know, being encouraging and like, you know, coming up with different ideas and scenarios and ways that they could handle what their situation that they're in, I really thought I was helping. And then it really quickly, I just didn't read the room, you know? I learned that the hard way for sure. And I definitely called that person.
I didn't read the text group room either.
I definitely called that person the next day and I apologized. I said, I really didn't mean for that to go. And thankfully they were like, I know you didn't. This is just what I was feeling. And that's why that happened.
Yeah. Friendship can be overwhelming, and that's okay. That's what this podcast is about, figuring it out.
Exactly. But we do have a great meme that we found online that I wanted to draw attention to. There's a lot of great people that we follow on Instagram that are friendship centric and relationship and like platonic relationship centric. And some of them are like workplace relationship, which is another type of platonic relationship as well. But the one that I want to draw attention to now is Adam Grant. He has a great podcast about workplace relationships. But he wrote on Instagram not too long ago, unhealthy relationships are ruled by anxiety and guilt over letting people down. At best, you're relieved when you don't disappoint. Healthy relationships are guided by joy and gratitude from lifting people up. You get the pleasure of contribution, not the pressure of obligation.
See, there's an obligation sometimes in these conversations where like, I feel like you want me to help you, but you don't. So like, I'm stuck. You know what I mean? Like, I'm stuck. So why don't I change the environment? I don't think it's avoiding in any way. I think it's a place of lifting that friend up with what they're doing great at. And hopefully they find either that other friend or that professional, whether it be a financial advisor, whether it be a therapist, whether it be, you know, whatever it needs to be. A doctor.
Absolutely. Or, you know, in your case with Runyon, you know, I know who you're talking about in this scenario. And, you know, I know that for me, I love compliments and maybe complimenting that person. And you know, that's where I would go, you know, because I'm trying to learn to give what I want. Right. And so if I was in your situation, I might be like, you are such a catch. You're going to get snatched up one of these days, you know, and maybe that's all I can give in the moment, because that's all I want to hear is a compliment, maybe.
Lightning wall.
Do you believe friendship is therapy?
Yes, within reason.
What's your favorite friendship environment?
At my house, eating food I've made.
In one word or hyphen it, what kind of friend is Gabrielle?
Accountability friend.
And what would you like to do better as a friend?
Not have an opinion about everything. Gabrielle, do you believe friendship is therapy?
No.
What is your favorite friendship environment?
A restaurant where we can hear each other.
In one word or hyphen it, what kind of friend is Pallavi?
Exquisite.
What would you like to do better as a friend?
Not be so judgmental. Secretly. Pallavi, what are friends for?
Friends are for giving you grace when you mess up. Gabrielle, what are friends for?
Friends are for making a passion gig happen, no matter what.
I hope you all have been enjoying all the different guests that we're having on this season. We have our next friendship expert that will be up in the lineup of this of our season. And as of today, September 15th, when we're recording this, Marissa G. Franco, who wrote a book called Platonic, just became a New York Times bestseller. We will see you next time.
1, 2, 3, 4.
This episode was produced by Team Access Productions and Fast Nickel Inc. and presented by Hoo Ha Ha. Our co-producer is Anna Daneker.
Our consulting producers are Kathleen Cho, Rose Harwood, and Philip Pisanchin.
Head of production is Emily Albright. Digital content director is Susie Cabello. Our digital production assistant is Daniela Heredia Vega.
Our podcast artwork is created by Arshwarya Sukesh. Original music is by Joey Sherman, and special thanks to Hari Savitala and Sara Khan.
Don't forget to check out the Hoo Ha Ha website to listen to WAF and all things women-led comedy. And as always, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you're listening now. This helps our show's visibility and helps us keep making it for you.
And find us on all the socials, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and even Twitter at WAF Podcast. That's W-A-F-F Podcast. To find links to our exclusive vodcasts, live shows, shop merch, or even text us, visit WAFpodcast.com.
We truly appreciate you all checking in with us online. But you know that friend that you've been like, I really haven't checked in with them in a while? Go do that.
Yeah, go do that now.